Welcome back. We're here with Lorraine Miller, Interim President and CEO of the NAACP, and I'm Mark Steiner. And Lorraine, you think it's time for a long walk to D.C.?
Oh, it is. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning, Lorraine. How are you?
I'm thankful. Cannot complain, should not complain, and nobody cares.
So,
how you been?
I'm very well, and I know that you are about to leave the position of CEO. You've hired a new CEO of the NAACP, and I congratulate you all on that.
Well, yes. His name is Cornell William Brooks, and as a matter of fact, his first day is Monday, June 30th, and we're looking forward to coming aboard.
And you will remain on the board?
I should go back to the board, yes.
Good. So let's talk a bit about what this anniversary is today of when the Supreme Court decided the Shelby County case, and what it has meant, and your analysis of what you think the ruling on Shelby v. Holder has meant in this last year and beyond.
Well, Mark, when the Supreme Court decision was rendered last year about this time, it was a devastating blow to us, to the civil rights community, meaning it's not necessarily civil rights community. I look at it more to the American voting public, because what the Supreme Court did, in my humble opinion, took away the protections that we have enjoyed in voting rights for many years. And it just gutted it, just went to the heart of it. And you can, if you remember, there were several states that immediately, like the decision came down early afternoon, that evening, several states had come up with some draconian voting ID laws that they had on the back burner, that they didn't think they could pass in their legislatures, but they did. And some of the secretaries of states and states' attorney generals came up with this draconian measures that we had to deal with it. And that was a signal that these folks are primed to make sure that people of color and poor people in particular don't turn out to vote in the elections. And I think it's a matter of the demographics are changing, Mark. These folks see it. They saw during the 2008 elections when President Obama was on the ticket, and they saw the power of black and brown votes and white and Jewish folks, all kinds of the rainbow of people that came out to support him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, okay, we got to stop this because we've got to at least slow it down in a way. And so they've come up with these voter suppression laws that 22 states, not just one or two, but 22 states in this country have come up with these very draconian voter ID laws that really put a chilling effect on folks' ability to go to the polls. And that's un-American, in my humble opinion.
And what also the things it sets up, I think, and I think this has been going on for a long time, what this sets up immediately, though, is that when you say 22 states, that's 44 senators.
Yes. Yeah.
That's 44 senators who they're trying to guarantee will be
reelected, yes.
On the right-wing end of the spectrum, yes. and conservative who are opposed to voting rights and many other things. And so, this is a deeply political move.
Yes, it is. It is. It is a way of, and you know, we're nonpartisan, but you have to look at what you have to call what you see.
Right.
And you look at the way redistricting has gone on in the states and the gerrymandering that's occurred. I mean, I even look at my own home state in Texas. Yeah,
right.
I mean, you look at how they've gerrymandered some of these districts. It's to protect the Republicans, and then they'll put a spattering of Hispanics, a spattering of African Americans, and they say, "Oh, we've got a multiracial district." And sure, you can go vote, but you have no your voting power is so diluted, you have no real positive way of influencing an election. And that's what this is about. And we have to stop this. And we just have to, I think people sometimes have gone to sleep and not paid attention to what's going on. But this gerrymandering and redistricting that's going on, it's just absolutely atrocious, and it's against the freedoms. You know, you have the conservatives always talking about freedom, but it's the freedom and the right to vote, to cast a vote unfettered, and making sure that that vote is counted. That's what America is about, and that's why people want to come to this country, and they, you know, we've just got to make sure they do it legally and legitimately, but you know, once they do, they have the right to cast a vote as any other American. I just don't understand this. So what we're trying to do now is to say to the Congress, this has been a year. You've gotten, I think, January 16, Mr. Sensenbrenner and Mr. Conyers introduced the Voting Rights Amendment Act, and it literally in the House has been sitting for a year. I mean, since it was introduced, nothing has happened. Mr. Goodlatte had a hearing on the Supreme Court decision, because he will tell you he had a hearing, but he had a hearing on the Supreme Court decision, not on the bill.
Right.
And now, tomorrow, the Senate will at least, Senator Leahy will have a hearing on the Senate side to get the ball rolling. But, you know, we can get one side of the Capitol working, but it takes both of them to pass something that and get it signed by the president. So the inaction on the House side is still prominent, and we're trying to say to them, look, folks, we're coming up to the midterm elections. You're sitting on your hands. That is not an American. That's not the America we know, not the America we are working to preserve, and you need to get this done.
You know, one of the things I want to, we only have a few minutes left here, Lorraine Miller, but I do want to throw this at you, that dear friend and colleague, Sherilyn Ifill, who is has the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the CEO and legal director, she and I were talking about this, and one of the things we talk about there is a direct connection between Citizens United, McCutcheon, and the Voting Rights Act, and somehow there has to be some move from the bottom up across this country connecting all the people opposed to all three of these things, because they really are interrelated. They're not separate.
Yes, they are.
You know?
Yes, they are. They are interrelated. And that's why I think our rally tomorrow and what we're trying to do out in the districts, making sure I tell people when I talk to groups about this, I said, we have to have the Jim Wright syndrome. And they say, what's the Jim Wright syndrome? I worked on his staff for 11 years. And one of our most dreaded moments was when he would go home to Fort Worth and come back on Monday morning, and he'd go in his breast pocket and he'd pull out a 3x5 card, and he would just go through everything. People, when he was in the grocery store, he was at the doctor's office, at the filling station, people come up to him and say, this happened to me. Your staff didn't do this. So it was the dreaded Monday morning. What we have to do, what we have to do as citizens, is go to our members and make sure this resonates with them at home. You can do a lot of visiting here in Washington, but you really impress them when you visit them in their district offices, and then when they come back to Washington after a weekend at home, this is on their radar screen. This is something that member will go then to Mr. Goodlatte and say, you know, Mr. Chairman, what's the status of this bill? That's how it gets moved. When are we having a hearing? Is the markup coming shortly after that? What are the amendments? I've got an amendment I may want. That's how we get this process moving. We have to start from the ground up to our members and say, this is something I want you to go back to Washington and work on to make sure it happens. I want you to co-sponsor. I want you asking the chair, when is the hearing? When are we having a markup? When can we offer amendments? That's the way we move this process. And without that, they'll sit on their hands and say thank you very much and let the clock run out.
Before we, it's true. And before we run out of time, Hillary and Miller, we only have a couple, about a minute left, less than a minute. You mentioned an event happening tomorrow.
Yes, we're meeting. The hearing is in the Senate Judiciary. Starts at 10 o'clock tomorrow. We are having a rally afterwards at 12:30. If it's not raining, out on the grassy knoll right in front of the Capitol, where the triangle area is on the House side. We're expecting at least a couple of hundred people to come out and rally. We've got members that are coming out to be supportive. So if anybody that happens to be on Capitol Hill, stop by 12:30 tomorrow at the grassy knoll area. You'll see us. We're all leadership conference on civil rights and little lack. It's a bunch of us.
So Lorraine Miller, interim president and CEO of the NAACP. Thank you for joining us. Also, thank you so much for stepping up and steering the ship of the NAACP over this time as they were looking for a CEO. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you
so
much.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you and hope to talk to you again.
You will.
Good luck to you.
You too. Take care.
Okay.
Lorraine
Bye-bye.
Miller. We'll take a brief break and come right back with sound bites on the way there. Let me remind you that one of our regular contributors, Dr. Kay Whitehead of Loyola University, presents Notes from a Colored Girl, the Civil War Pocket Diaries of Emily Frances Davis, tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Red Emma's Bookstore and Coffee House at 30 West North Avenue, 7:30 tonight. Join her. I'm in the middle of reading this book now, preparing for our interview with her in the coming week. And Kay Whitehead's book, Notes from a Colored Girl, the Civil War Pocket Diaries of Emily Frances Davis, is not to be missed. 7:30 tonight at Red Emma's, 30 West North Avenue. We'll be right back. Stay with us.